discover the tips and strategies that will help you achieve your retirement goals. I'm your host, James Knoll, and this is the podcast dedicated to helping you retire well. It all starts right here on Ready for Retirement. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Ready for Retirement. I'm your host, James Knoll. One of the biggest challenges that people, when they retire, face is, am I going to outlive my money? I think it's probably concern number one that most people have. Now, combine that with a potential age gap between spouses, and there's a double concern here, or there's a multifaceted concern of how do we make sure that we don't outlive our money for the both of us, but especially for the surviving spouse. So what happens if the both of us spend all of our money on travel or things that we want to do or just basic living? What happens to the surviving spouse if there's a significant age gap or if one spouse just predeceases the other? So that's going to be the topic of today's episode of how do we invest for longevity, but in the light of a one spouse potentially predeceasing the other by some number of years. Now, this question was, or it's coming from a listener question, and I'm going to call the listener Sarah. And Sarah writes in and she says this. She says, hello, I have been listening to your podcast for months now and have to say they're the best thing for someone like me to start understanding this crazy financial world. Thanks, Sarah. I'm a professional in a non-financial field and my husband is a CPA. After listening, I'm able to have better conversations with him and look at what he is saying without utter confusion. Here's my question. Number one, he has two questions. I'm just going to read the first one here, maybe save the second for another episode. But she says, my first question is this. My husband and I are in the process of selling our business. We're going to end up with anywhere between $1 to $4 million in our pockets that we can invest. Reality suggests $1.5 million, but we are still casting our net for higher offers. We have a home with about $450,000 of equity, and we have about $100,000 in a pre-tax 401k. The real estate from the business will bring in an additional $350,000, which we intend to use to buy a rental property to give us security, plus to take advantage of tax breaks. My husband is 7 years older than I am, and realistically, due to genetics and prior health issues, I will probably live into my 90s and the last 20 years of that without him. I am 61 years old and will have to work 2 more years to help with any transition after the sale. He's already getting Social Security of about $2,000 per month, and I will be eligible for about the same amount at age 65. My question is this, how do I invest basically for 2 lifetimes? I want to spend the last years of his life while he is still able to travel and get around having a good time. We have a realistic idea of what that is because we have spent about 12 weeks a year for the last 5 years doing just that despite owning a business. He is concerned about leaving me without enough income for the long haul. One of my ideas is to use the home equity to self-insure long-term care for him, and if it is used up, go live in the rental property. Any advice on how to plan for investing for 2 different life expectancies? All right, well, thank you for that question. And yes, I do have advice for how to think about this. And it's a good question, as I mentioned at the beginning, of it's easy enough to understand how do withdrawal rates work and how long can they last and how much income can be generated. But life isn't always in these perfect little boxes where it's not as if both spouses are the same exact age and have the same exact Social Security benefit and the same exact assets on both their balance sheets. So the question is, how does this change if there is an age gap between spouses? So there's a couple things I want to consider here. One is fairly general, and then one is more specific of how you can apply this to your particular situation. The first, it's fairly straightforward. The first consideration is this. It's just understanding the math around sustainable withdrawal rates, or maybe not understanding the math, but understanding the assumptions that have gone into generating these sustainable withdrawal rate rules. You have no doubt heard me, if you've listened to the podcast before, talk about the 4% rule, talk about Guyton's guardrails, talk about where that research comes from. And if you look at it, when you look at the 4% rule, which is kind of the original withdrawal rate rule by Bill Bangen, he wanted to know what's the most amount of money that you can withdraw if you're assuming your portfolio needs to last for 30 years. So as he did that, he wanted to test through different times in history, through good times in the market, through bad times in the market, through high inflation, through low inflation. How much money could you pull from your portfolio and be reasonably assured that you're not going to run out of money? And that number was right about 4%. And that 4% rule was done testing various rolling 30-year time periods, meaning that that portfolio doesn't necessarily matter so much your age as much as how much or how long, how many years could that portfolio create income before it began to run out. So that's the 4% rule. Then Guyton's guardrails, so Jonathan Guyton came around and expanded upon this, and I won't go into all the rules of it. I've mentioned this in previous episodes and really one of the most recent episodes, but he talked about what if you reallocate your portfolio and what if you implement some guardrails or some rules that you follow around your portfolio. He wanted to see how do you stretch that 30-year time period to a 40-year time period, knowing that life expectancies are getting longer and knowing that some people are starting to retire earlier. He wanted to minimize the risk even more. And really, again, the risk is how do we minimize the chance of you running out of money, or how do you minimize the chance of anyone running out of money? So he wanted to test various 40-year time periods, and he wanted to see what was the highest initial withdrawal rate that one could take while still being very reasonably assured that if they follow the rules, they are going to have a portfolio that can sustain them for about 30 years. So why is this my first consideration? Well, it is because going back to Sarah's question, if you look at her age and her spouse's age, there's a 7-year age gap there. But what I would look at isn't so much what's your age gap. I would look at, do either of you have more than 40 years left in your life expectancy? And that's kind of a crass way of saying, when are you going to die? But we don't know. But Sarah's main concern is, what if her husband predeceases her? Will she still have enough money to continue living comfortably after that point? So the way I would look at this is, back to her question, she is 61 today, and she will continue to work in the business even if it's sold for another couple of years. So I don't know exactly what this looks like, but I'm going to make the assumption, I could be wrong here, I'm going to make the assumption that Sarah and her husband don't actually start drawing money from their portfolio for another couple of years, which puts her at age 63 and her husband at age 70. Well, if that's the case, if you invest your portfolio kind of along the guidelines of Guyton's guardrails, and if you follow the rules based upon that research, if you start drawing money at age 63, that research is designed to say, how do you stretch those withdrawals until 103? That's 40 years to go from age 63 to age 103. So if you look at that, it doesn't necessarily matter if one of these spouses is passing away along the way, financially speaking. I know I'm kind of boiling this all down to just the financial side of it, but the guardrails approach, or the withdrawals approach, it's not looking at, okay, are both spouses living and what are they doing and what are their other income sources? It is purely looking at how much money can sustainably be drawn from a portfolio before you start running the risk of running out of money. So first consideration, more general, is I don't know if I'd actually be too concerned about this yet. The second consideration, I'm going to show where I might be. But I say that because if you have, Sarah, 40 years of withdrawals, are you going to be okay? My guess would be yes. If you said, yeah, if I had a plan that could take me to 103 years old, she'd probably say she'd be okay. It's not such a significant age gap to where Sarah is 40 years old and her husband is, say, mid-60s or 70, where she very well could have much longer than 40 years left. And in that case, these types of withdrawals would need to be modified in order to stretch that income for even longer. But because both of their life expectancies, I don't know them, I don't know their health, I don't know anything about them, but general life expectancies fall within the number of years income could be created from a portfolio like this, at first, I don't have much of a concern when I see this. Now, the second thing I would like to look at is where I might itemize or where I might be able to identify some more concerns. And this is the way I would actually encourage most people to view this. The second consideration is going to be a little bit more specific. It's not just, okay, how many years left do you have of life and can a portfolio generate income for that long? That is only looking at one aspect of the financial plan. Here's what should be done. And by the way, this should be done whether there's an age gap or not. Even if both you and your spouse are the same exact age, you're both 60, you're both 65, you're both 50, doesn't matter. These are considerations that as part of a good financial plan should be considered because there's no telling how long any of us have to live. And we may think we both may have life expectancies that on average have us passing away at the same age, but that doesn't mean that life's going to turn out that way. So here is always the risk here. The risk is that one spouse predeceases the other. In that case, what happens? Well, the risk and the challenges that you're going to face is tax brackets will become condensed in terms of you'll now be on a single tax bracket as opposed to married filing jointly. Your standard deduction would be cut in half. Your income could change. Your expenses could change. Your portfolio could potentially change. We'll talk about that. But it's these really significant changes to just the environment that you're working in or the environment that you're taking income in, that is what's going to have probably more of an impact. And these are the specifics that should be considered. Let's look at a couple of examples to flesh this out. Let's assume that Sarah and her husband both have Social Security income. She mentioned her husband has a $2,000 per month Social Security benefit and that when she begins collecting, she will also have $2,000 per month of a benefit. Let's also say that after the sale of this business, they've got $1 million, just to use a nice round number. And that $1 million, say it can sustainably generate $4,000 per month. I'm going to ignore taxes for a second and keep this super simple. So what that means is they have a portfolio that's generating a 4.8% withdrawal rate, because $1 million, if you generate $48,000 per year, that's $4,000 per month, and they both have Social Security income of $2,000 per month. Well, if their expenses today are $8,000 per month, then the math checks out great. Their combined Social Security benefit is $4,000 per month, and their portfolio is also generating $4,000 per month. So they have income coming in that meets their expenses, which means everything checks out, at least on paper, and they should be good to go. But what happens if one of them dies? What happens if one spouse predeceases the other? This, again, is a risk that everyone should be looking at in their financial planning, because depending on what expenses are and depending on what changes, it may be an issue or it may not be an issue at all, at least financially speaking. So let's look at that example. Well, what if one of these spouses dies? What if Sarah's spouse dies? Is she going to be okay? Well, it will depend upon what her expenses are. Let's assume that if Sarah's spouse passed away, then instead of her expenses being $8,000 per month, they would go down to $6,000 per month. Well, if that's the case, then it's still, financially speaking at least, no problem. What happens is she would lose her spouse's Social Security benefit. She would collect a survivor benefit, which is really just going to be the higher of her own benefit or her deceased spouse's benefit. But in this case, if we're assuming they're the same, she'll continue collecting $2,000 per month, but that income is cut in half, because Social Security was previously $4,000 per month combined, but now it's $2,000 per month combined. So income has been cut in half, but if we look at the portfolio, assuming that they were each other's beneficiaries on the accounts or assuming everything was jointly owned, well, the portfolio is going to be able to continue generating that same $4,000 per month. So in this case, she would have her $2,000 per month from Social Security. She would have $4,000 per month from investments, $6,000 combined, which happens to meet those living expenses of $6,000 per month. So in that scenario, there's really not a whole lot of risk there. Even if one spouse predeceases the other, the surviving spouse can continue maintaining expenses going forward. So in that instance, there's not a huge financial risk. But now let's assume, what if Sarah's spouse passes away and expenses stay $8,000 per month, meaning there's not a reduction in expenses at that point? Well, she would still lose half of the combined Social Security benefit, so she would still retain her $2,000 per month benefit, but now there's a gap of $6,000 that needs to be generated between expenses of $8,000 and income of $2,000. So that would mean the portfolio would need to deliver $6,000 per month of income, which is $72,000 per year, which is a withdrawal rate of 7.2%, which isn't sustainable if you are looking at having something that can generate income for 30, 40 plus years. Now, it's not enough to say, okay, portfolio, I need you to generate 7.2% now. The portfolio doesn't care about our needs. The market doesn't care about our needs. It can only go so high based upon applying certain principles before you start running the risk of overspending and running out of money. So we have to look at the portfolio in that context and understanding what's the highest this could potentially go, and then do some planning based upon that. So back to Sarah's question of, is there a risk here? How do we make sure that we're okay? Well, this is where I want people to get more specific of not just understanding what your withdrawal rate is, but what would change if one spouse predeceased another? What would change between your expenses? What would happen to your portfolio? What would happen to your income? What would happen to other things like that? So let's actually walk through what should you do to make sure that you are preparing against this potential risk in retirement. Number one, I think the first thing that everyone should need to understand is what would happen to your expenses. Understand what your budget would look like. And this is kind of an awkward thing to do or a hard thing to do, because it's almost looking at your spending and saying, what would this look like if one of us died? Which isn't the most pleasant type of budgeting exercise. Budgeting is not fun to start with sometimes, let alone doing a budget assuming that one spouse has predeceased the other. So as I'm talking about doing this, you don't need to get so granular in terms of, okay, well, our water bill might go down from $100 a month to $70 per month because so-and-so takes really long showers. That's not the type of changing the budget I'm talking about. Those are little things. Those are going to have incremental changes to your expenses. I'm talking about the big things. What would travel look like? You already mentioned, or Sarah mentioned in her question, the goal is to take a lot of those trips while they're both have their health and their time together. Well, what would that travel budget look like? Are you cutting back there? What would housing look like? Okay, imagine your spouse passes. Are you staying in this home? Are you downsizing? Are you going to live with family? Are you going somewhere else? That could be a really significant expense, and it could potentially go up. If you have to move somewhere that's, say, closer to family or closer to care, and it's a more expensive area, or it could potentially go down. If you're relocating out of a very expensive area and moving somewhere and downsizing somewhere where property taxes are lower, maintenance is lower, or other things like that. Are there any insurance premiums, whether they were life insurance or long-term care insurance or other things like that, that you're paying on your spouse who passed away? Those types of things will go away. And then some things like food. You could cut these in half, or if you want to be conservative, maybe decrease them 30 to 40%. So generally speaking, if you write out your expenses, this doesn't have to be a super in-depth exercise, but write out your basic expenses, which of these things would change? Which of these things would change in a major way? Okay, not going back to a $20 or $30 difference per month in a water bill, but going back to travel, to housing, to bigger line items like groceries each month. How would that change? So understanding your budget, because really what the question comes down to is what level of expenses will continue to need to be supported if my spouse passed away. The second thing to look at is what would happen to your portfolio. Well, in most cases, assuming both spouses are each other's primary beneficiaries on things like IRAs or Roth IRAs or 401ks, and assuming that other non-retirement accounts are jointly held, this probably doesn't change a whole lot. It's just okay if Sarah and her spouse both owned $500,000 IRAs together, and one passes away, well, now the surviving spouse just has one IRA worth $1 million. So it might shift in terms of what the account is, but in many cases, the portfolio won't change all that much. Cases in which it would change, though, are things like life insurance. Was there a life insurance policy that paid out? You know, if the surviving spouse or if the deceased spouse had a $500,000 life insurance policy on their life, well, when they pass away, there's actually more money going into the portfolio that can support the surviving spouse. So that could change the portfolio. Or you could have things like, was there an extended time period in a long-term care facility? So if the spouse that passed away had to stay in a long-term care facility or needed some more acute care, did that drain the portfolio? What did that look like? So understand the impact of a potential long-term care event for the surviving spouse. You could potentially have some type of a trust account that goes to kids or goes to other beneficiaries or doesn't go to the surviving spouse. Not super common, but there are cases when that happens. So just, is there anything like that that would possibly reduce the size of your total portfolio if one spouse were to pass away? And then also, like we mentioned, if you move, if you plan to change residence or move to a different area and you downsize your home, that could potentially add to your portfolio value. So as you look at this, you want to understand what's going to happen to your portfolio, because as we apply different withdrawal rates, as we apply kind of maximum withdrawal rates to see what's the most amount we can take from your portfolio, that's going to be expressed as a percentage of the portfolio as a whole, based upon your age, based upon the portfolio composition, based upon a few other factors. So because that is expressed as a percentage, the higher the number of the dollars in the portfolio when the surviving spouse begins taking withdrawals for their life only, the more income can be created. So that's why you want to have an understanding of what would happen to your portfolio if one spouse predeceased the other. Another major thing that's going to potentially change is what would happen to your income, and specifically what would happen to your non-portfolio income. So if you have something like Social Security and both spouses are collecting a Social Security benefit, well, once one spouse passes away, the surviving spouse will collect the higher of the two benefits. If it's their own benefit, they'll just retain their own benefit if that's higher. If their spouse that passed away had a higher benefit, then the surviving spouse would collect a survivor benefit, which ups their benefit to the higher of the two amounts. So what would happen to income? Understand what that looks like. Are there things like pensions? And if there is a pension, what's the survivor benefit, if anything? Oftentimes when people do have a pension, they'll get options and they'll say, you can go elect your pension benefit and it's going to be an annuity for the rest of your life. And you can collect this higher amount for the rest of your life, but if you pass away, your spouse gets nothing. Or you could collect this lower benefit, but if you pass away, your spouse continues to receive 100% of that benefit. And then there's varying options in between of 50% joint survivor, 75% joint survivor. Whatever it is, understand what would income look like for the surviving spouse. So once you've done these things, once you understand how would expenses change, how would your portfolio change, how would your income change, then what that allows you to do is be really specific of, do you need to adjust spending upfront when the both of you are alive to account for needing more portfolio or needing more protection for the surviving spouse in the future? That may be the case. It may not be. You may say, look, okay, we've done this. We've gone through the exercise. And even if one spouse did predecease the other by a fairly significant time period, at least financially speaking, the surviving spouse would be okay because of the income sources, because of the portfolio assets, and because of the level of expenses that need to be generated. So if we go back to that example that we started with, of I said, okay, let's give Sarah and her husband $1 million, which is, let's just assume that's the after-tax amount they walk away with in the sale of the business. So they have $1 million, which can create $4,000 per month of income for them, just using a simple example. They also have $2,000 per month of income from Social Security. We are excluding the real estate for now, just to really focus on this. But if that's the case, what we have to realize is this, is the riskiest time in the entirety of their retirement is probably today. Because if Sarah's husband passes away, and if we're assuming that income goes down, meaning Social Security gets cut and withdrawals go up, the riskiest time is always now. Because, and this applies to everyone, not just Sarah and her spouse, but if the spouse passes away 30 years from now, there might only be a couple of years where the surviving spouse is living with less income and needing more money from their portfolio. So that's far less risky than if one spouse passes away today and you have to live potentially 30, 35 years on lesser income and needing more money from your portfolio. So what you would need to do in that scenario, just at a basic level even, is run a basic what if of what is the most we could withdraw from our portfolio today under the worst case scenario. That is one way of looking at this. So look at your portfolio today. Assume, not a fun scenario, but assume your spouse passes away. What amount of income could your portfolio generate for you in that case? What's the highest amount of income that it could generate? Then add that to any income sources that you as a surviving spouse would have. And if you're doing this for your spouse, add this to any income sources your spouse would have if they continued living after you passed away. The combination of that, the income sources plus portfolio withdrawals, if that is enough to meet their expenses, then great. If not, though, then that's where you might need to do some planning. And some potential planning points around this is, okay, if something like that did happen, could you sell a home to supplement that income and downsize to a different area? Number two, the reality is you probably won't be spending the same amount in 5 years that you will be in 25 years. So your income and your expenses aren't necessarily just going to be consistent all the way throughout retirement. There's going to be varying withdrawal needs. So in that, check out episode number 91. I did a full episode on that called How to Plan for Varying Withdrawal Needs in Retirement. And to tie it back to this question or this particular topic, it's, okay, well, if something like that did happen, how do you understand or how do you plan for the fact that maybe you're living on one amount today, but then that would change based upon things like vacations or needs today versus needs in the future? So run some more detailed projections around how does this change if you have different withdrawal needs in the future. Or maybe there's life insurance, and it's probably too expensive to buy life insurance to make it make sense if you're doing it at this age. But if your spouse has life insurance, or if you have life insurance and you're already paying for it, well, how would that change these projections? That would add the portfolio value. That would do some things that would allow this to become more doable versus just having one spouse pass away, reducing the income, and then the surviving spouse having to live on that. The reality is that some of this is tough to do without software to really model out what would happen for you, without the ability to run what-if scenarios of what does happen if one spouse passes away, what would income look like, how would taxes be impacted when you look at different standard deductions and different tax thresholds, what if the sale of the business was for different amounts. So really, financial planning software makes all this a whole lot easier. But just wanted to unpack what are some of the core things you need to be looking at as you're planning for longevity and retirement. How can you take into account not just longevity of both spouses, but what if there's differing longevities for each spouse? How does that change things? So I hope that basic framework was helpful in terms of understanding, one, what do different withdrawal rates look like in terms of how long can these withdrawal rates be sustainably withdrawn for? But then number two, more specifically, understanding what would actually change if one spouse predeceased the other, between expenses, between income, between portfolio. That's a more accurate way of helping to plan for two lives, not just one life expectancy for the both of you. So thank you for the question. Really appreciate when you all submit questions. Thank you to all of you for listening and supporting the show. If you haven't done so already, and if you want another way to support the show, please be sure to subscribe on YouTube. The YouTube channel is under Root Financial Partners. You have this episode, you have other content, and it really helps more people to find our show when there's more subscribers. And it's just fun to see the reach of the podcast, the YouTube videos grow and grow and grow. So thank you to all of you, and I will see you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Ready for Retirement podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and let me know by leaving a 5-star review. And as always, for a list of the notes and the resources mentioned in today's episode, you can find those at the Ready for Retirement website, which is readyforretirement.co. That's readyforretirement.co. And if you have a question that you would like for me to answer in a future episode, then you can also go to the Ready for Retirement website, readyforretirement.co. There's a page called Submit Your Question where you can submit a question for me to answer in a future episode. Thanks as always for listening, and I'll see you next time. Hey everyone, it's me again for the disclaimer. Please be smart about this. Before doing anything, please be sure to consult with your tax planner or financial planner. Nothing in this podcast should be construed as investment, tax, legal, or other financial advice. It is for informational purposes only.